Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Dave. So Dave, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Absolutely. Thanks. It's great to be here, guys. And my name is Dave Chura. I'm in the Los Angeles area, and I am a musician masquerading as a tech entrepreneur, a ruse I've been carrying out successfully for nearly 30 years, and I'm currently the founder and CEO of a company called OnClick. We are a security company and privacy company in the blockchain space.
Awesome. So how did you get the idea to start this company?
Well, this is sort of round two of the company. I started initially a few years ago based on trying to create technology that would protect the privacy, in particular, social media privacy. I have two daughters, obviously addicted to social media. We didn't have horrible, you know, things happen, but a lot of questionable things happened. And I thought there must be a way to do this. In fact, I saw Mark Zuckerberg grilled in front of Congress, and I came to the conclusion, no one's going to fix this. You have to fix it yourself. So I said, we could build technology that will help protect the privacy of people. Built the first system. And here's how it happened. We were launching the company in March of 2020 at the South by Southwest show in Austin, Texas. And if you know March of 2020, you know, that was the start of COVID, and Austin, Texas canceled the South by Southwest and the show. And so had to go back to the drawing board and think, well, what are we going to do? And I needed to stay true to our privacy mission. The mission was privacy. And so basically, I had to sort of shut us down for COVID, because honestly, the world could think of nothing but COVID around that time. So I had to sort of suspend operations. And then the next thing was I was watching TV wondering, what are we going to do? I've been CTO and I've been an executive at large companies, and I've been through IPOs and M&As for small companies. My first time as a CEO. And so I'm thinking, and I'm watching TV, and Lady Gaga comes on TV and says, we're looking for tech rock stars to help fight COVID-19. And so at that moment in time, I decided we have to do something there. And then I, with my company, created a system that we entered this thing called Call for Code Global Challenge. And the Call for Code Global Challenge was technology that would help fight COVID-19. And we developed a particular system. We had an idea. And to make the story shorter, eventually went on to win third place worldwide. And then judges included Mark Cuban, Bill Clinton. I was interviewed on a number of TV stations and a media blitz, because it was a much bigger deal than I thought of. And I always joke with them and I say, you know, I wrote this system while watching Ozark at home during COVID, and eventually won enough to where the IBM Corporation embraced it, paid for deploying it worldwide. And then that sort of put us through the COVID era, where we were working COVID technology. Then a little over a year and a half ago, I decided that there was something to this blockchain crypto thing, and that our technology in privacy and security was an excellent fit to what was needed in that area. So that's where I decided we're going to focus on that. Now, we don't want to leave behind our social media mission. Of course, it's dear to my heart. And but we're a corporation. We need to move forward. That's where the idea came from. It's a long story, right? But basically, I have a long background in security technology and cybersecurity in a number of different places. And that is a place that was highly lacking in the blockchain space.
Makes sense. Yeah. So can you talk more about blockchain specifically and the role of it when it comes to your business?
Absolutely. We're not a blockchain provider. If you look at the general ecosystem of blockchains, here's how I describe it. Blockchains are a 100% public utility. There is nothing on a blockchain that is not available to everyone in the public, anyone. That's what we like about it. That's what we think is awesome. There's no secrets. If you hold cryptocurrency, your balance is on the blockchain for anyone to see. If you exchange or ran transactions, they are recorded forever on the blockchain, and they're freely available to anyone. However, if you want to run commerce, that is, you want to buy and sell things, you need a private. You need something private. You need something secure. That's typically described as wallets, which is how we describe our product, although I've always struggled with that definition. But if you look at the blockchain ecosystem, you have blockchains which hold public information. But to do anything meaningful, you need to hold things private. That's where the wallet side comes in. And so that has been left to everyone. And so there's been a lot of lessons learned in privacy, a lot of lessons learned in security with respect to how blockchains and users interact using wallets. There are hundreds and hundreds of wallets. And so we sought to distinguish ourselves and to take what we consider to be all the lessons learned.
So I guess if you can just talk more, I'm just curious, like, let's just get into more specifics, right? So what type of customers are you serving now? And I guess, like, what is the vision? So if I'm going to work with you, like, you know, what industry would I be in? Like, what's your customer profile?
Yeah, that's wonderful. So we call a true custody wallet, which is our own term for basically saying that you own your information outright. It's private to you and you don't share it with anyone. We have a phrase, no uploads, no clouds. We're kind of the anti-cloud, which I think is very consistent with the ethos of the blockchain. So our customers are folks who are typically very interested in controlling and securing their intellectual property. You guys obviously know about NFTs, right? I claim the worst named thing in the world, but that sort of brought forward the idea that intellectual property in the form of digital collectibles could be worth something and is worth protecting. That's one of our typical customers, is someone who wants to have truly unique assets. I mean, today there's Bored Ape Yacht Clubs that sell for $300,000, but I can click right and download the same. With Enclave, you are unable to. So our number one customer is people who have high valued intellectual property. And that's not necessarily art or music. It could be contracts. It could be a number of things. Our second market segment is high valued individuals. You have a lot of cryptocurrency, you've got a lot to lose. And in the blockchain ecosystem, mostly you are responsible for your own security. Much like I said about security and privacy in social media, in the crypto space, you truly are responsible for keeping your assets secret. You know, there's stories of people who've lost their keys. And well, as I say, there's no one to call. There's no customer support saying, I lost my keys. Could you please restore my $20 million worth of Bitcoin? That isn't going to happen. And so given that responsibility, it builds a market for people who need to do that type of protection. And we, of course, do that. Our third segment is gaming. One of our partners and shareholders in our company is the CEO of a gaming company, a Web3 gaming company. And basically, we will be selling through gaming. And it's an interesting stat that if you talk to investors in Web3 gaming or crypto-based gaming, they find that for some reason, unexplainable, gamers tend to spend much more money in cryptocurrency than they do in actual regular currency in a game, sometimes up to 10 times. So where a normal person may have $300 or $400 worth of assets, they have $3,000 or $4,000. That can't go, you just can't skim over that, right? That is a 10x opportunity, is something to cash in on, to put it bluntly.
Makes sense. So how many customers are you serving right now, and how does the pricing work? So like a monthly model, or, you know, a one size like fits all kind of like one time cost? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So to be quite honest, we're mostly pre-revenue. We're in beta tests with folks. We always try to say up front. So we're around 27 actual users, if you will, pretty small. We're going to a show to try to essentially break out, right? And so the pricing model is basically twofold. One, I'm not sure if you're familiar with what we do exactly, but what's unique about what we do is that we have a device. This is what one looks like. Yeah. We are what we consider to be what we call a hybrid wallet. You'll find on the market there are wallets that are hardware. There's a company called Ledger who is the prime leader in it. But a Ledger device, of which I own a couple, a lot of people own them, they're basically backup devices. I'm going to say it out loud, right? Using one Ledger device to actually buy and sell things with cryptocurrency can be very, very difficult. There's a security model. I hate to say it. I'll say it. It's antiquated. That's what I'm going to say in my speaker role in the next conference. And so what they have is a device that's very popular. They claim that they've sold 6 million of these devices, but it's very hard to use and very hard to use in terms of commerce, which is what I'm interested in. There are also software wallets, which are like MetaMask. And they are very convenient, but sort of difficult from a security perspective, because you really don't control your assets in a way that if you're a high valued individual or have high valued intellectual property, you might not trust. So you're faced with a dilemma. And we have addressed that dilemma by having a device that you never carry with you. It's always at home. We have technology that allows us to use this device when it's at home. We do what I call modern security, which basically means a hardware device like Ledger. All of your keys are stored inside that device, so it needs to be a tank. It needs to be a huge safe with a 24-word passphrase. You nearly have to break into your own device to be able to use it, right? And that's because everything is there. It's in all your eggs in one basket kind of solution. We're part of what's been going on for years in the U.S. military and other places is we take a decentralized approach. Does that ring a bell? Where we have mechanisms where we distribute key information across many different sources, including our own device. That gives you custody of everything, and it gives you an amazing amount of fault tolerance. If you buy a Ledger device, for example, you need to buy two. I have a quiz coming up in my talk where I show various devices. And, you know, the answer is they can be secure, but if you lose it, it's gone. Once again, it's gone. And so we've decided that the way commerce should move forward on the blockchain is to have a hybrid approach, which allows you to own a device that you never have to deal with. You just set it up once, but gives you the convenience of using things just as an app, knowing that we put in practice the best security practices that will guarantee you don't lose your assets and no one can break in, that kind of thing.
Makes sense.
That was a long answer, Dan, wasn't it?
No, yeah, it's good. But I guess I can look at your pre-revenue now, but do you have like, I'm not saying it to give us like a concrete price, but just like if you have like some sort of like price in your mind of like what the price structure is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was leading up to that because I was interested in that, which is the device is $99. Okay. And and we have a subscription, which we're not enforcing right now for our first users, that will be somewhere between $1 and $5 a month.
Well, okay. That's very, very affordable. So in terms of that price, so I guess like, are you making most of your profit per se off the actual physical devices? Or I guess like, where does that come in terms of like how you're making money off of it?
Right. So when we look at our business plan, the revenue will primarily, the profit will primarily come from devices in the short term. But in the long term, you could see, I've been in companies where we've had this model before, where when you look in the early days, the subscription and hardware revenue are very close. But as time goes on, the subscription revenue grows and as you keep bringing on more clients. So eventually there's a line that's crossed where subscription revenue profit actually overtakes the hardware. And so this is the growth opportunity for the company, which is that in the short term, I mean, if I pitch one more piece, right, which is this device I showed you is completely different than a Ledger device. It is standard hardware off the shelf because we don't need to create a tank to prevent people from breaking in, because this device, if stolen, cannot be used to recover anyone's assets because it's only one part of a whole system. Because of that, it ends up being incredibly inexpensive from a cost perspective. So at $99, we'll make a very comfortable margin and could see as volume goes up, that going down. I mean, my mission personally is to get everyone to be able to use this. And so it's not going to get there without having a low entry price. And for me, the $99 and that, right, it is low. But I also say this, if you only own a couple hundred dollars worth of crypto, don't go buy a $100 device. Right. Yeah. But when you start getting more, or it starts moving up and you have something you need to protect, then you need to transition. And in our business model, the subscription also covers what we call a virtual wallet. So mm-hmm. you can start with our system and have a virtual version of this device. It's not as secure because you don't have the thing, but basically in our app, you can decide I've reached the point where I want to protect this more. And you can essentially, in a few clicks, you can transition everything from the virtual wallet to the physical wallet. And let me say it this way, God and Apple willing, you can purchase this device with cryptocurrency with inside the app, which they don't have an issue with that, right? I mean, you remember we're a wallet. So right now we're holding your assets, your crypto assets, and we do all the transactions you can do and swaps and all that sort of stuff like any wallet would do, any Web3 capable wallet. But we do have a place that says, I want to buy one of your devices for $99. And here's the current exchange rate with various currencies that you hold. So in your wallet, you can just say, hey, I own $99 of USDT, which is one of the coins. Click here and we will transfer the USDT to Enclave and schedule your device for shipment. Again, we're trying to remove all the barriers to being able to A, be part of the crypto commerce ecosystem and B, enjoy the simplest and highest security. So that all was about, Dan, was that we need a subscription in some cases because we're allowing virtual wallets, which means we are incurring cost that there. And if I say one last thing about that, which is I also think we're the first company ever where when you usually think of services, you think of I need to build out Amazon Web Services and I need to build out all this stuff. We're the first company that actually sells you the infrastructure. When you put this device in your house, it's computing and storage that you own, that we use. Your internet connection for this device comes from your home broadband. So when we run transactions over the blockchain, they run from your device over your home broadband to the blockchain. Enclave's not involved in that transaction. That's a privacy issue, which is that you don't run transactions through us. We don't take commissions off of that, but you own infrastructure that we didn't have to build out. So if we sell a million of these, let's say, we will have put a million quad core processors out on the grid. We will put 64 terabytes worth of storage and have a million broadband connections with which we are now building out commerce in the ecosystem. That would be impossible to build out at Amazon, impossibly expensive, and it would take very many people to run it. Our technology is centered on one group of people who own this device, not scaling to millions at Amazon. That brings our cost of running this business to be very low. It also gives us revenue immediately because we will make a significant profit on the first day of someone uses this. So I like to say we're the only company who sells you computing and storage and then charges you to use it.
Yeah. Sorry, like I was more comfortable. Like you are giving all the answers, whatever questions are coming to my mind, you were giving the answers of all those questions one by one. So I thought, okay, I should.
That's okay. I was anticipating the question that said, I'm a first time CEO. What have I learned? And I go forward with this. The first thing you learn about being a CEO is that your job now is to talk for a living. So that's what I've been doing for a year.
Awesome. Well, that's good. That's good. And, I was just thinking about like a person like me, like most of the time, I just forget where is my car's key immobilizer. And I just forget it sometimes, even though it is very important for me. But this is possible that someone can lose this device somewhere. So in this case, first of all, as you said, like the virtual wallet will be awesome thing. Like that's helpful, obviously. And hypothetically, there will be only $99 lost. But what's the mechanism to avoid like impersonation, if someone else is going to use this device somehow, is there any possibility?
We absolutely. So obviously, Kasim, that's something we think through from the start, right? When I have this speaker role at a conference and I'm on a panel next week, this is one of the topics is two things, as you bring up. One is the things that we do that I think every wallet needs to. One is security, which is preventing people from using it. The second is reliability, if you will, which is if I lose this, what have I lost? And if I lose this, who can recover my account information? And as you point out, impersonation is the exact word, because if someone can impersonate you, then they essentially are you. And so we take a lot of different measures. So let me address some of them. One is the device and losing the device. Because of the way we do security, if you will, or cryptography, we have distributed key information, if you will, across a whole number of different places. And simply put, in your app and the device, for example. That's the simplest version of it. We have where you require both of those to be able to run any transaction or get any confirmation. So if you lose this, the attacker, if you will, has to also compromise your app. And of course, if they do, then they can impersonate you. If they can break into your phone, break into this app and go through the sort of usual kind of biometric stuff, and they've stolen your device, they're going to get in. I've been a security professional for 15, 20 years. Any real security professional will never say, this is 100% secure. No one could ever break in. What we look at is, what does it take for someone to break in? And if what it takes to break in is a very high barrier and the reward for doing so is low, that's the best we can do. That's how we measure things. That's how, without going into it, that's how the US military would measure it. No one says these are unbreakable, but what our goal is to make sure that the effort it takes to break in and the rewards you get is small. For example, our device, if you want to break into this device, you have to find out where mine is. This never leaves home. It's at my house. I've run SaaS systems forever. Every single one of them at Amazon, IBM is bombarded because everyone knows where those servers are. They bombard them. I've never seen once this device or any of our folks report that anyone has actually found them. And if they do, they don't even know what they've got. So we've got this multiple thing. So losing the device doesn't mean that you've lost your assets. It means that someone else has to do something more. From a recovery standpoint, as I pointed out, Kasim, impersonation is the way you can break into any system, right? I have a slide that says you can have the biggest, baddest lock, safe, huge, doesn't matter. If someone has the key, they get in. I mean, that's just, that's one of the debunking things I'm going through, which is that the strength of the lock is almost never really useful in a real situation. It's the strength of protecting the keys, because if you can impersonate me, you can get my keys, you can drain my account. I'm sure you know that, but I'm saying it out loud. And therefore, the real problem is not around how to create, as I call it, tanks around a device like Ledger's done. It's how to create a key management system that prevents issues for you, right? And so we also do some fairly fancy proprietary stuff that has to do with the mathematics of splitting keys up. And we do some things we think are unique that we have a patent, but we're not filing because my view is that we're an intellectual property company, but we are protecting our property with trade secrets, because disclosure would be rough on us because someone could duplicate it and we would have a difficult time proving that they did. So right now I've taken the intellectual property route as trade secret. So I don't reveal it, right? But we do the title of the patent is Protection of Information Without Encryption. As I pointed out, when you encrypt something, that's great. And everyone will say, it's encrypted, which is awesome. But the question is, where are the keys? I give you a short story. Back in 20 years ago, I was running a company. I was CTO. I hired a lot of people from a storage service provider, which was a new thing back in 2005, whatever it was. And just in an interview, I'm talking to guys that says, yeah, well, we're getting all chummy. And it says, yeah, so we, and the guy says, yeah, you know, we get bored. We start looking at people's data. And like, yeah, isn't it encrypted? He goes, of course it's encrypted, but we have the keys too. And so that's yeah. the kind of thing that we're trying to sell. We're trying to make it easy for people to not have to understand that nuance, because they will see things like 100% secure and military grade and all of that, and, you know, ledgers made of epoxy and you can't pry it open. All of that is interesting, but of course, as you point out, Kasim, is useless if you can be impersonated and derive a key. So we spent all our time on the keys, nothing on cryptography. We don't invent cryptography. We have invented fault tolerance type of things, which allows us to protect information without encryption. And the reason I say that is because the patent that says protection of information without encryption means no keys, which is the critical piece. And I wish I could tell you much more about that. It's something we're fairly proud of.
Yeah, sure, why not? Okay. So, yes, the only thing to protect these things, obviously, is make as much as many we can make the ifs. So in your case, there are a lot of ifs. So yeah, if someone really want to impersonate, he will have to maybe steal my device. Maybe we'll have to steal my mobile app, mobile phone. And at the end, maybe he will have to kidnap me as well.
A lot of things. Well, you know, Kasim, that's exactly how we think. And I claim how, you know, hardcore security people think is they don't think about let's encrypt. They think about what does it take to break in and what is the barrier you have to get over? You know, it's a fact, but most break-ins are insider jobs. Right. Inside, when you trust a service provider, you're trusting everyone who works there, everyone who works at their subcontracts, and everyone who's a vendor of them. And I just gave you an example where I interviewed a guy who said, just look at people's data. Maybe that's fixed now. I hope it is. I don't know if that is or not. But the reason that can exist is because of this concept of custody, which is that if you decide that you don't want to manage, you don't want to keep things secure on your own, and you want to outsource that to someone else, then you open up a whole set of ifs there. If I can call you up and say, I forgot my password to my crypto account, and they go, sure, what's your name? What's your address? You know, oh, what's your secret number? Yeah. You know, you can be impersonated that way. And that's why having the device is the key entity for us, because you have custody of it. And here's what I say. You really think something's going wrong in your crypto world? You just unplug this and it's now done. There's no more transactions, period, because you've just shut off the spigot to one of the components of the keys. Imagine going to Binance and saying, geez, I think there's something wrong with my account. Could you please shut off, you know, my keys? I'm sure they will gladly say, of course, sir. But I mean, did they really? Can they really? I don't know. I know for sure that if I turn this device off, that key material is not there. It's gone. That's why I'm a big fan of the decentralization part. And that's why I'm in blockchains, because I think that is how I like to believe that that's how eventually everyone will have a device like this. If I give our overall delusion of grandeur is that what we have in here, because it's made from standard components, it's not some weird epoxy with some weird exotic hardware, that it will be embedded in every TV in the world eventually.
Yeah, indeed. Lastly, let me know. I believe you must have faced a lot of challenges, but let me know what challenge you faced in technology, especially because when I developed, in fact, when we developed the first blockchain project in around 3 years back, at that time, our first transaction went into the black hole. So I believe there must be some other interesting things that happened to you while you were working on it. But yeah, if you can just share with us.
Yeah, of course. I once did a pitch on this, and it was kind of an open pitch. And there was a guy in the back who said, all you have to do is take, you know, Linux this and that and put it together and you got that. And I said, you have no clue what the problems are in solving this. There are dozens of problems that you don't even know that you're going to have to solve yet. I've been in this for decades, and there were many problems I didn't realize we had to solve until we got there from a technical standpoint. There are all kinds of other problems that are non-technical, of course, but you're right on the head, is that you really don't know what it takes to do something until you do it. I mean, that's my mantra. You don't know. I mean, this device stays at home all the time. I mean, this is a critical piece for us, and it is an incredibly difficult technology piece, believe it or not. It has nothing to do with blockchains. It has everything to do with internet service providers and local networking and wide area networking and all kinds of, and have living in a dynamic environment. And that just solving that will take you a while, and you won't know. Most people, I suspect, won't know the problems they need to solve because they haven't run with 37 different routers, you know, and six ISPs. And that's key for us because every other hardware device says, yeah, we do this. There's a company called Arculus where they have some amazing technology, but they break the basic security rules, which is they have a device. It's in the shape of a credit card and you put it in your wallet and you carry it with your phone. Now, if you lose your wallet and your phone, like just like I said, you can be you. The point is, don't carry this around and you can't lose it, right? You can lose your phone in our case and you're fine. You can lose the device, or as one guy told me, your maid comes in and steals the device. I'm like, okay, well, if you have a maid, you probably have a lot of crypto. I got it. Okay. So that's the, and that's the issue is that these companies that we compete with are all focused on physical security. They're focused on making sure that their device can't be pried open with a screwdriver or has some incredibly complicated passphrases that even you, I say, even you have to break into your own device to use it because you have to go pull up some piece of paper somewhere and go, where was I? And push buttons. Our device has no buttons, no screens. You set it up once and then you use the app as if you're there because we have automated all the best practices. I'm proving that CEOs talk for a living. Am I right?
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. So I would just say if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or the best way to get in contact with you?
Sure. The best way is straight email. I mean, we're a small company, right? And so we still have emails that only have first names. I kind of feel that is sort of a maturity, which is once your emails have to have last names, you're making it. We're still with the first name. So dave@enclave.com will get right to me. I will either respond or I will there. I'm also on LinkedIn. In all the usual places, we're on LinkedIn, Twitter. We have a YouTube channel, Discord. I don't see Discord that often. And I don't see Twitter that often, to be honest, mostly around LinkedIn and email.
Awesome.
Website. And there you go.
Yeah, well, I just want to say thank you so much for your time. We really enjoyed the conversation.
I did too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time, Dale.